Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our lunch program today. You are in here because you had a ticket. So we're glad that you're here. We have a guest speaker, or two guest speakers, and an awards program. We're going to enjoy lunch together. And one of the things that I like about this particular luncheon is it's an opportunity to kind of showcase some agriculture in the region where we are and where there's partnerships with the local university through extension that have proven to be successful. And so that's sort of the flavor we'll have for the presentation this morning. After that, we'll have a series of awards that are for extension materials. And I just want to say that for me, as somebody who's evaluating these materials that come in for award consideration, the quality of product every year is getting better. And our extension faculty are putting together some extremely nice resources that are obviously worthy of national recognition. So that's what we will do after we have our presentation. The lunch will be brought in, so while the presentation is going on, please give your attention to the speaker, but also enjoy your lunch. And then after that's over, we'll go through and present the award. So I guess I didn't introduce myself. I'm Desmond Lane. I'm the outgoing vice president for ASHS Extension. And Chris Watkins, who is where? Where's Chris? Chris Watkins is the incoming vice president for Extension for ASHS. And we're delighted that you're here. Hopefully that you'll enjoy this. And thank you for sticking out right to the end almost of our conference. So without any further ado, I'm going to introduce our first speaker. And so both Chris Walsh and Wade Butler will be making the presentation today. But Wade is going to start off with a slide presentation talking about basically the long-term mutual benefits of partnering between the University of Maryland Extension and Butler's Orchard. And I don't want to steal any of his thunder as he talks about their operation and things they've been involved in. So please give him your full attention, and we'll look forward to your presentation.
Thank you, Des, and thanks, Chris, for getting me off the farm today. I was saying it's nice to be out of the rain for and the humidity for
a bit.
So,
can you hear?
Okay. If not, just somebody wave or yell. So Butler's Orchard, we're about 30 miles northwest of here, of the center of Washington, D.C. So there's 1 million people in our county, Montgomery County. There's about 8 or 9 million people in the DMV. So we're a 300-acre pick-your-own fruit and vegetable farm with a roadside market, started by my parents in 1950. So this is about 1980, and Rick Helfelbauer here, Rick knows our operation as well. This might look kind of familiar. This was early 80s. You can see there's a lot of farm ground around us still. That was about the time that Montgomery County put together a land preservation, farm preservation program, which has been very successful in saving about 93,000 acres in Montgomery County's Ag Reserve. So it's a huge swath of the northern and western part of Montgomery County that is dedicated to ag. The zoning went to one house per 25 acres, and they would even cluster those homes on smaller acreages to keep larger contiguous pieces of farm ground available. So things changed along. This is a few years ago. Our farm's there on the bottom right. This is Clarksburg, which was a sleepy little village, and now there's a Harris Teeter and a Grill Marks and Petco, Pet Smarts, things like that. So we were on the leading edge of suburbia. Now it's jumped over us. So our business has had to change as our area has changed. But it started out in 1950. My parents, with no farming background at all, came out of Silver Spring, a suburb here of D.C., and bought 37 acres of land in Montgomery County, roughly 30 miles from where we're standing today. My dad was actually pre-med, and it was not a good fit one way or the other for him or for them. And at that time, Chris can correct me on some of this, but I think it was Dutch Velheller was extension director at Maryland. And he told my dad to come on over to horticulture. We got something for you. So he did that, liked the program, and worked in the university and at the university farms and things. And graduated and immediately was looking for something to do, and Dutch knew of a 37-acre property in the rural part of Montgomery County at the time. It was out there, certainly, and it had 17 acres of peaches on it, and it was looking for a new owner. So my dad, at the age of probably 22, and my mom, the same, who graduated from Penn State, they bought this 37-acre property at partly a Dutch's urgings, I think. He thought it would be a good thing, but then he later worried that he had gotten them into something that really wasn't sustainable for him. It was either too small or it was too big, so he had some concerns later. And he played an active role for the future of that operation and with my parents, so just to make sure that they got off to a good start and that there was a path forward for them. So, as I say, my mom and dad, some time ago, my dad got drafted right away. They bought the farm. Within the next few months, he got drafted. It was 1950. Luckily, he did not go to the Korean War. He went and served in Germany during that time period and was able to get out and come back to the farm for peach harvest, which was new, of course, to them, having no real background in that. Started a family. My brother, Todd, sister Susan, sister Carol, and myself, they're at the far left, and they kind of got underway there, but it was a different kind of operation. Everybody around us was dairy, and my parents coming out of Silver Spring without any real farming background, I don't want to say they didn't know what they were doing, but everything was new, and so it was terribly important that they had the connection with the university and extension to learn about how to take care of peaches, post-harvest storage, marketing, even the marketing. Harold Hecker was the marketing fellow at Merrill at the time. He became a good friend over the years, and my parents learned a lot from him. Dr. Art Thompson came along, was tree fruit, and that increased the knowledge that was there. But there was long-term relationships were built with the university starting in 1950 with a young couple that really didn't know much, and there's they were ready to learn a lot. It's a more recent picture of most of the operation now. My sister Susan in the blue top has retired in 2017, so she's retired and got her own orchard now and cidery going on. And that's my mom, 89. She's still going strong, comes into the office and keeps things straight, keeps an eye on things. It's interesting because my son, Tyler, with a hat, is the general manager now, so they interact quite a bit, and that's been an interesting thing to watch, grandmother and grandson there, and general manager. And my son Ben, my daughter Hallie, all three of my children are active in the farm. And before I go any further, I am going to introduce my wife, Angela, so I don't forget to do that. They turned out very well, and of course the big part's right there, so give her the credit for that. But my parents learned a lot of crop production and things that were going on. I don't know how well you can see this in the back, but this is early on with my dad and my grandfather. They don't look particularly happy there. There's a lot of peaches. They're outside and underneath a pear tree or something, and the stripes in the background are the log house that was being renovated at the time, shall we say, that they'd moved into. They didn't sleep there in the winter because there was no heat. And that little building in the back is the outhouse, which is, I think, underneath the new kitchen addition that went on. Well, I say new, it was probably 30 years old, something like that. There's a lot of peaches, and what do we do with them? So some retail, some wholesale. They came down into this area and sold some peaches, trying to figure out how they could move them all. This picture, everybody seems to be a lot happier. Maybe it's because it's all women in the picture, and they seem to be enjoying themselves and what they're doing. But they would come out, friends would come out from the suburbs here and would spend the night sometimes and help do peaches. And it was everybody enjoyed their time on the farm. So it was an interesting dynamic that happened at that time. So our first crop was peaches. This is, for anybody knows peaches, I think this is Golden Jubilee. Anybody plant Golden Jubilee anymore? That's long gone. Right. It wasn't a really red peach, and so now, of course, it's got to be red. But got into peaches and did some pick-your-own. The trouble with this is, for pick-your-own folks, it doesn't look like it's ripe, so nobody picks it. And then it gets ripe and falls on the ground. So it was not a great variety for pick-your-own, and my parents started learning that it was all wholesale, and we picked them ourselves. Tyler asked my mom about the crew the other day, what the crew did. There was no crew. It was my mom and dad, and that was pretty much it. But the wholesale thing went along for a while, and we started to expand a little bit and got people to come back. We're on a pretty small little road. It's a rural, rustic road in Montgomery County. The county wants to keep it that way. It's fairly narrow, very scenic. And this little peat shed, as we call it, is a Sears Roebuck. Buy it on, not online, buy it through the catalog thing that came out. Had been a chicken coop, moved it out from Silver Spring, became our first market. And we sold peaches and strawberries. Started moving into strawberries at some point there in the early 50s and sold them out of this little building. Well, things progressed fairly well, and in 64 we built this market. It's just up the hill from the little peat shed. It's at the bottom of the 37-acre farm. A lot has changed. That rock's still there, but other than that, there's been a lot of changes that have gone on. You can tell things. We added a porch and overhead doors. It was all open air. That went on for quite a few years as the business expanded. The family grew, and we expanded with it into our current market. This is a little dated, but that's still the size of our market today. And we retail everything that we grow on the farm. We pick ourselves and retail it through here. We don't go to any farmers markets, no off-site sales. But about 95% of what we grow is harvested pick-your-own. So the folks themselves come out and do that. And that really took off for us. I guess because my mom and dad had no preconceived ideas about what to do, they were willing to look at new and innovative things. So the pick-your-own thing had not really started. They really didn't know what that was, but there was an interest, and they had an interest, so we got going on that. There was small fruit and weed scientists at the University of Maryland that were extremely helpful. The strawberry industry was just starting to get going. My father, being somewhat on the forefront of some of that, was a founding member of a group called Berry Associates, and that was with Dr. Glenn Stadelbacher after he retired from the University of Maryland. Came on as a consultant and worked with many universities around some part of the Midwest and the East Coast, Mid-Atlantic especially, and elevated strawberry production terrifically in a few short years. And so, like in this picture, we're not wholesaling, we're retailing these at our market, but we were picking an awful lot of strawberries at the time. Pick Your Own came on the scene, learning as we go. We got up to 30 acres of Pick Your Own at one time. We couldn't plant them fast enough and expand quickly enough. Of course, we all know Pick Your Own ebbs and flows, and so we're about 15 acres now. We're doing much better production per acre, but people aren't picking the volumes that they used to pick anymore either. But Pick Your Own took off. You can see there's lots of different things now that happen, and people dress up and enjoy coming out to pick. Still planting lots of strawberries. This is myself and my son Ben and Bob Rouse, University of Maryland Extension, and retired now. He's helping us. We've had strawberries on our land for a long time, so we're looking to rotate crops, and we don't fumigate anymore. Biofumigation is part of our operation, but it's been good having Bob along. Of course, Bob, being former extension at Maryland, is tied in to all the university folks, and so plant samples, soil samples, leaf tissue samples. He's great for helping to coordinate all that and helps us progress. This is Dr. Kim Lures in the middle between my son Ben and I, and this is her variety Flavor Fest that she developed at Beltsville. We tested that and have been trialing strawberry varieties forever. Beltsville, University of Maryland, wherever there was a good variety that looked promising, we stuck 100 plants in here every year of many different varieties to see what did well in our conditions. And Flavor Fest seems to be a real home run for us. This year was very challenging. We had rain. We're matted row. We're not plastic culture. We've tried plastic culture a little bit. It doesn't really fit our business model as much, as a lot of folks aren't looking for mass production, but they're looking for a day on the farm, and they're looking for some educational parts of where the food's grown so they can bring their kids out. And so matted row for us works better than plastic culture at this time. We don't like seeing dead strawberry blossoms. We've had a irrigation system, of course, so we can frost protect, but we needed to get a little bit further along. And Dr. John Leacox here on your left was doing some research with nursery plants about water, soil temperature, leaf wetness, a whole bunch of things, and he was in nursery stock, wanted to move into small fruits or strawberries, and we're doing a little politicking here. The gentleman on the far right, I believe, is a plant breeder from the University of Georgia. Anybody maybe know? He came up from Georgia, and we did a little politicking to thank some folks for funding some of that. So let's see if I can make...
Juicy red strawberries ripening on the vine are some of the sweetest signs of spring's arrival. But as any farmer will tell you, bringing those berries to perfect picking condition takes meticulous care and precise timing. Just ask Wade and Ben Butler of Butler's Orchard, a small fruit and vegetable farm in Germantown, Maryland, owned and operated by three generations of Maryland alumni. In early spring, saving strawberries from frost is a battle the Butlers wage nightly.
I would just start driving around, looking at temperatures, record the time, record the temperature, get close enough that it's, okay, we're going to have a frost event, we're going to need to turn our irrigation pumps on and put water out to protect the crop. I pick up the phone at 3 a.m., call my son, and the phone call from Dad comes, come on out to the farm, let's check these blossoms and strawberries. I was, next day at work, dragging, just kind of, this is awful. There's got to be a better way to do this.
A better way is in the works, thanks to a research team led by University of Maryland professor John Lee Cox. The researchers are using wireless sensor networks to help farmers monitor crops not just for frost protection, but to reduce water usage, cut down on fertilizer applications, and enhance production. Sensors placed in the soil gather data on things like moisture levels and environmental conditions, but is then transmitted through radio nodes to a base computer on the farm, and ultimately available right at a farmer's fingertips.
Because it's all internet-based, you can actually just log in on your cell phone, you can open up the software, and you can look at that sensor data right on his phone. And because of the sophistication of the program, we can now send alerts to his phone, a text alert or a voicemail.
I was working with a grower the other day, and they actually said to me, this is a dream come true, to be able to monitor my crop's water status in real time and automate the irrigation based on that.
Lee Cox developed the sensor networks with engineers at Carnegie Mellon and previously studied them in nursery and greenhouse systems. Now, thanks to a grant from the Walmart Foundation administered through the University of Arkansas's National Strawberry Sustainability Initiative, Lee Cox and his team are testing the technology for the first time in strawberry fields at three locations in Maryland.
We have seen that this technology for the nursery and greenhouse system can save water, fertilizers, labor, and also reduce production times. So we are hoping for some of those benefits in strawberry production as well.
Because sensor networks eliminate a lot of guesswork in the field, Maryland farmers can better conserve water, nutrients, and fertilizer, in turn reducing what's running into the Chesapeake Bay. And while the technology is already going a long way towards preserving strawberry fields forever, it might just represent the future of farming in general.
This morning I was laying in bed looking at wind direction and wind speed, and that just a few months ago seemed like a dream.
The way I like to see it is we're just getting started. We've just got the toolbox. We just started with the toolbox, and now we've got tools that we can apply to all sorts of different types of situations and crops.
Space bar. There we go. All right, back to it. Great, thank you. So that was Dr. John Leacock. We're not quite there on that research on the farm as far as the water essentials and things go, because we have a big old irrigation system over a lot of area that can irrigate pretty much anywhere in the 300 acres, so it's not a pressurized system. If we had a pressurized system and your sensors and you have electronic valves and things, when the sensor tells you that it needs water, it would open up, water would flow, strawberries would be irrigated, and everything would be fine. Of course, my theory on irrigation is that it proves Murphy's Law every time, that if something can go wrong, it will go wrong with irrigation. So I don't think I could be in bed knowing that and sleeping knowing that the frost control is going to come on and everything's going to be fine. But it's certainly a step in the right direction. We've learned a lot just having soil temperature and the moisture levels, wind speed and things like that are helpful in a lot of different parts, not just strawberries, but a lot of different things that we're doing on the farm. So we're looking forward to working with Dr. Leacock on that in the future. Other advances that happened at the farm, this is one of the first ag chemical containment storage facilities that was built in Maryland. I guess it's about 30 years old or something now. It's got a little age to it, but we had to go to, I think the University of Wisconsin had some blueprints, and Ohio State had some blueprints of some different things, and we worked on those together with our local extension agent to help pull that together. And so this has been a wonderful thing for us. Of course, like a lot of farms around, our old chemical shed where we would mix chemicals and things was right beside the creek because that was a good place to get water. Not a great place if you have a spill. So we're very happy to have this kind of technology and make these kind of advancements. Des?
Slides have you got?
Not too terribly many, I guess.
A third.
I don't know if I even are.
Okay.
If I do a restart, it's going to take a while.
Well, I can find the last little part here.
I'll restart it, but you can continue to talk.
Okay.
You can see if we get back there.
All right, so we're having a few technical difficulties here, of course. I guess I would say that part of what, with extension and with our operation, my dad was very progressive at an early age, and helped start Berry Associates, which advanced strawberry production. Also, was one of the founding members of North American Strawberry Growers, and that also helped to advance strawberry production throughout North America and especially the East Coast. And so he was very progressive that way. Working with extension agents not only in Maryland but in other states, was able to help pull information together to help advance crop production in our farm, but in other farms as well. He was instrumental, along with a couple other growers, in moving the Maryland State Horticultural Society from a small little organization. We joined with Penn State. We now go to Hershey, Pennsylvania for the Mid-Atlantic Fruit and Vegetable Conference. That's a big thing in January. It's a great show, a big trade show. If you get a chance to be there, it'd be interesting to feed us. You'd have a lot of interest there, I'm sure. We've continued along. My dad passed away in 2000, but we've continued along in his forward path as far as working with universities, working with Extension Service. I'm the current president of the Maryland State Horticultural Society. We advocate for fruit growers, both small and large, tree fruit, small fruit, and we work closely with the university. We're happy that we have a new plant pathologist at the University of Maryland. We have some regional work with Penn State, so it's been some great collaborations between Maryland, Virginia Tech, New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania to move things along. So we're very happy about that. I had some slides of drip irrigation that we put in to help us. Blueberries was a crop that was not being grown in our area. That was something that was really in doubt. We're not certainly not in a blueberry growing area. Soils aren't right, so through composting, organic matter additions, we amended our soils. Talked with the folks in Michigan, talked with the folks up at Rutgers in New Jersey, and we now have about 17 acres of blueberries, which is a big crop for us. People love it. You don't have to bend over, get on your knees like strawberries. It's a little easier to pick. And, of course, we've all benefited from the health aspects of blueberries, so that's been a big addition for us. We also, right now, we're picking thornless blackberries. I know that a lot of that, a lot of those varieties have come out of the University of Arkansas with John Clark, and he's pushed that envelope. We still grow some of the USDA variety, Beltsville varieties that give us a longer season. So part of our goal is to have something to pick all the time. We were pretty big in black raspberries for a while. Disease issues took us out probably for 20 years. Orange rust was the culprit in that, and I want to say Mike Ellis at the University of, at Ohio State University, he kind of figured that out and some methods of protection, and we're now into black raspberries to a whole group of people who don't remember black raspberries. When you say raspberries, they think red. And 20 years ago, you said raspberries, people thought black. So we're reintroducing black raspberries to our people, and we get folks kind of far and wide to come pick black raspberries for us. Tart cherries is also a good crop for us. We had plenty of bloom for a bunch of years, but weren't setting much fruit. Dr. Walsh came out, and we got looking at, he recommended a plant growth regulator at a certain time, and Chris, ever since then, we've had some cherries. It's not always been a huge crop, but we always have some cherries. And now, it's right. Yep, I'll take that. You know, I'll take some cherries over no cherries. So that's been a great advancement for us, and we're probably growing 6 or 8 acres of tart cherries now. Montmorency, all goes pick your own, and people just love that. Agritainment's a big thing for us where we are, to kind of branch off. As things change, I showed you all the people that have moved into our area. 3 years ago, we started charging admission to the farm. We're $3 a person to get in, 2 years old and up, every day of the week except Wednesdays, which the Wednesdays are now called Wacky Wednesdays because lots of folks have realized that, and it's a free day they can come out with no admission. And we get lots of it did just what we wanted it to do, bring people out in the middle of the week, help clean up ripe fruit that maybe didn't get picked on the weekend, but still give us plenty of time for the next weekend to get more fruit ripe, and it's been a good thing for us. We put folks on trolleys. We drive them to the blueberry field, let them off, and bring them back. They check out right off the trolley, so we've captured all those dollars. It didn't go over well with everybody. Some folks, some of our older, more loyal customers, had a hard time paying $3 to come onto the farm when they've been coming for free all those years. They like driving right to the field as opposed to having to get on a trolley and be taken out to the field. So social media has been huge. This younger generation is all about social media, and they do a great job of it. So one of the slides I had was someone who wrote in how they didn't like our system and it was too expensive. They wouldn't come anymore. They'd go to a neighboring farm. And my son wrote a really nice response in that, you know, we're trying to continue to farm in Montgomery County. We want to increase our service to the customers and provide a better experience. And so I think we've won people back from that. It went over better than all of us thought that it would. It went really well, and there's no turning back from that now. Things change. So agritainment, of course, is in all parts of our season. It extends our season. Pumpkin time, October, big pumpkin festivals every weekend. We draw thousands of folks from this area, Northern Virginia as well. And so when we have a year like this with lots of rain and there's disease issues and I see pumpkins are curling up and dying in wet fields, but there's always some there. So October can be that month that can really save you in some things like in a season like this, where we had a poor strawberry season due to all the rain that we had. So we're looking forward to October. We're hoping that it's going to, you know, it's going to dry out here and things will come along. So we've got a ways to go. But in closing, I guess I would just say that We have a long relationship with the university. My dad and mom certainly learned a ton of stuff as they came out. I think we've done a good job in incorporating that information and turning out a nice farm, a successful farm. We're 68 years and still going strong. It's nice to be able to give back now. We host many tours at our farm. We have lots of educational opportunities for students and for kids. So we're very happy about all of those things and happy to have groups like this and work with universities. It's terribly important for us, as you guys all know. Dollars are shrinking, budgets are being cut. So the Horse Society, we advocate for positions to be filled and for the university extension to continue on. So I hope that we're partners in that and that we're continuing to get boots on the ground and people in the field so that we can continue for another 68 years. So with that, any questions? Or I'll sit down. Everybody can enjoy their lunch. Yes. We're finishing up blueberries right now. Blackberries are coming into their own. We're picking a variety Chester, which is an older variety, but it's thornless. People don't like thorns. So we're picking lots of blackberries right now. Flower garden is up and operating. Some pick-your-own veggies are there. I had a shot where we do some potatoes, and we'll harvest some potatoes, and people will dig them out of the ground themselves. So it's a lot about, you know, getting kids and letting them do things and parents showing them where their food's coming from. So red raspberries are just getting started as well. We'll have apples end of gala, Chris, end of August, right?
August 20th.
August 20th, there you go. So apples aren't far away. Yes, sir. More agritainment, I think. There's going to be more festivals. And that's part of the younger generation, which we've transitioned into. My three children all have positions of leadership in the farm, so they make a lot of the decisions now. I kind of step back and keep them from making any what I think are disasters, but that's the direction that I think they're moving into. And I think it's what our customers are as well. See, people don't pick the volume that they used to pick. When we had 30 acres of strawberries, people were picking. We had big flats, and people picked 20, 30 pounds. And now it's different. Now it's not as much. So I do think there's the buy local, eat local is a big part of it, and I think that'll continue. Yes. Not really. We've done a little bit with grapes, and that was quite a long time ago. But the new varieties of table grapes, that could be something in the future, but we don't do it at this time. I don't know, Angela, can you think of anything that we've tried that was a bust? Yeah, some varieties within certain crops haven't gone as well. I mean, strawberries need to be red. The variety All Star is a little orangey. You know, people kind of look at that. So strawberries are supposed to be red. So, but for the most part, now we haven't. I have a friend of ours, who's a grower a little further north, and he tells me I have the best location in the country. And anything we grow, we can sell, and that's just about true. Yeah. Yes, sir. So we've been growing Cut Your Own Flower Garden for 30 years, 40 years. We had some perennials at that point in time and some Asiatic lilies. I should let you do this because you're much better at it. But we're on plastic now, so that makes it easier to harvest and get in and out of. And we have a lot of herbs in that field as well. And so, you know, it's like an impulse item at the grocery store. It's on the road that everybody drives by. And that makes all the difference in the world. People will stop by and will pick a bouquet of flowers. So a lot of zinnias. What else, Ange?
Oh, sunflowers.
so people can pick a, we provide a small bucket, water, and a knife or some pruners, which, handing folks a knife is something. And if you give them a little hand pruner, they disappear pretty quick because this, this works pretty good. This will work good at my house. So it kind of goes some. But what's a small bucket of flowers go for? But yeah, $10. You can pick all the, put all the, you can fill it as full as you want. So we found that the flower garden and some of those pick your own vegetables side by side go really well together. Yes, sir. We don't take the admission to the farm of $3 does not come off any of the crops. That's we talked about refunding some money back, and it just sounded a little bit too complicated. And I thought, $3 is a coffee at Starbucks maybe, so everybody ought to be able to afford that. Especially close to Montgomery County is an expensive place to live. I was going to say, my son actually has a whole series of slides when he comes to the university and teaches Dale Johnson's Ag Econ class of kids with their shirts covered, kids with all of their faces, we get all those things about, my child ate more than they picked, and so that's still part of it. We try to encourage sampling, but not feasting. But now that we charge $3, there's some parts of the world you can go to a farm and you can pay an admission fee and you can eat all you want. That's their business model. That's not our business model. But I see five people get on a trolley sometimes with nothing to pick in, no container. They go out and eat, and then they come back with, well, they do have a container. The container's empty, and then they want to try to get refund the money back on an empty container. But before, I would really grip my teeth about that, but now it's like, well, you know what? I got $3 from all five of you, so I don't feel quite as bad. Yeah. Do you have a question, sir? Value-added produce.
Processed
products. Right. So, yeah, value-added produce at our market. There's a in Frederick, right up the road from us, there's a nice jams and jellies. McCutcheon's are there. McCutcheon's is kind of known throughout the East here. So we sell a lot of their products. We sell pies. We have a bakery. We're not a scratch bakery. We got into doing donuts and some kettle corn, which is crazy how that kind of stuff goes. We started with one machine of each. Now we have two donut machines. We have two kettle corn machines. Trying to find labor to run them is can be hard. But, yeah, we try to do lots of things in our market. Actually, a small percentage of the market maybe is our own produce and things. A larger part now is either Maryland-made or Montgomery County-made or just other products that we find that we think our customers would be interested in. So we're pushing that envelope on value-added quite a bit. Yep. Okay, with that, thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.